Okay, great. So let's roll. Sorry for the late start here, everybody. All right, welcome back, everyone. First of all, let me thank, is Sherry on? Sherry's on. Okay, great. So thanks to Sherry and family very, very much for sponsoring tonight's shiur. L'ilui Nishmas, her father, Tzvi Yitzchak ben Simcha Bunim. May his neshama have an aliyah. May our learning be L'ilui Nishmaso. Let us get to where we are in Hilchos Bishul. The reality is we're circling back to something now that we actually spoke about at the very beginning when we were first laying out all of the different Kalim, Kli Rishon, and Kli Sheni, and Kli Shlishi. So we're sort of looping back to that. Some of this is a little bit of Chazara, especially some of the things that we spoke about, quote unquote, outside. But some of this is very, 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 very relevant. I love when this happens. You take a look here and you can see some of my little notes when I was a sweet little Shana Aleph kid, writing in some of the translations here. Anyway, so we were learning in my first year in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so let's take a look. Irim Kli Rishon. So let's talk about what happens when you pour from a Kli Rishon. We spent a lot of time dealing with, over the past number of Shiurim, dealing with Hachzara, the way that you return food to the fire and putting things on in the first place, on different appliances, blech with overturned pans potentially. Spoke about that last time. We spoke about using a hot plate, et cetera, et cetera. So let's get back into the actual Kalim. And this is going to take us through the next number of sections, some of which, again, we touched on in previous year and towards the very, very beginning of Bishul, some of which may be, at least some of the examples that we may speak about, are rather new. So let's discuss. Aser la'aros mikli rishon. It's aser to pour. Aser to pour from a kli rishon. V'afilu eino omed al gabe ha'esh. Even if we're not talking about a kli rishon that is al gabe ha'esh, even if the kli rishon has been removed from the fire, lo al mashkekar, you cannot pour this onto cold liquid. Now, a lot of this should be intuitive at this point, once we sort of know the basic building block, so to speak, of how Bishul works. So this should be rather intuitive. We know that if you have cold water, if you have cold liquid, even though Shmir Shabbos Kilchus writes, of course, afilu hu mevushal, even if it's already cooked, even if it's been cooked before, now that it has cooled down, we do say yesh bishul achar bishul bilach. When it comes to lach, when it comes to beverages or liquids, when it comes to anything in liquid form, even though it's true that it's already been cooked, we are machmir, and we assume that nevertheless it can actually be recooked again. Being recooked would mean simply bringing it back up to Yad Soleh Dispo. So to pour from a hot Kli Rishon, even though the Kli Rishon is no longer on the fire, even though it's not sitting on the fire and you're tipping it over, by the way, so the notion just in the first place of speaking about a Kli Rishon that's actually al gabe ha'esh, is sort of, what do you mean, agave hesh? By definition, if you pick it up, then it's no longer on the fire. Potentially, you could have a very heavy pot that's still sitting on the fire and you're simply tipping it, even though it's still on the fire. You could also have a situation where, let's say, with modern day appliances, something like an electric kettle, like a kumkum type of thing, where the heating coil is actually inside of the actual item itself, and you pick it up and you pour it either as a base that still remains attached and is plugged into the wall so that it's actually still al gabe ha'esh, the heating element is still there, or simply think about an urn when you turn on the spigot or you pump the top of a Shabbos urn, so that is irui from a kli rishon. You're pouring directly out of a kli rishon that's actually sitting on the fire. So in this instance, even if it's not on the fire, the point is that there would be no distinction with respect to what we consider to be irui mi kli rishon, pouring out of a kli rishon, whether it's on the fire or off the fire, whether you're talking about something like an urn or just a kettle, a tea kettle that was, let's say, sitting on the blech, and then you pick it up and now you're pouring. Afilu hu mevushal, even if you're pouring onto liquids that were cooked, as long as they are now cold, that is considered to be an act of re-cooking them. V'lo al davar yavish, she'eno mevushal kol tzarcho. You also cannot pour onto something that's dry, but even though it's dry, it's not actually fully cooked. Ki ha'irui mevashel, we presume, and here's really the kicker, we presume that even though it's no longer on the fire, that still is an act of cooking. Pouring hot liquid out of a kli rishon is mevushal. Now you might say that, of course that's the case. Why does this even need to be discussed? Why is this any sort of chiddush? What is novel about this statement? What's novel and what's interesting, what's intriguing is as follows. When we discuss the various malachos of Shabbos, it's not only a matter And we spoke about this a little bit when it came to returning things to the fire and the different kinds of appliances that we use. It's not only a function of the heat, how hot something is getting, and therefore, are you bringing it up to an objective temperature, or are you causing some kind of objective change in the actual food item and the subject of your cooking or attempted cooking? Remember that throughout all of Melachos of Shabbos, it also has to be at least rather comparable to the original paradigm of Melacha, which really exists in the Mishkan. Those things that were critical, those things that were of primary importance in the construction of the Mishkan, those 39 different brands of constructive labor, is what we call Melacha on Shabbos, the 39 Melachos of Shabbos, and therefore one has to be akin to the other. Conceptually, and this is going to become important when we start speaking about a Kli Shlishi, conceptually, you could have a means of bringing something up to significant temperature, but it in no way, shape, or form actually resembles Bishul. So you might actually achieve the same result, but you achieve the same result through a mechanism or through a vehicle that is fundamentally different enough from the actual malacha that was performed for the purpose of constructing the Mishkan, and therefore would not be considered to be a malacha. Keeping that in mind, there's actually significant chiddush here. This is really important to take note of. It's important to say, it does not go without saying, that if something is not on the fire, that could still be considered an act of cooking. You might think about, well, what were they doing in the Mishkan such that Bishul is even a malach in the first place? They were boiling up dyes and they were boiling up chemicals and things like that they would then need to probably submerge the actual wool and actual materials into, have it all boil up so that hot dye becomes absorbed into the fabric, into the wool, or into the other material. And perhaps if you are talking about a form of cooking that's not actually taking place on the fire, on the stovetop itself, perhaps that's not the sort of bishul that we would be referring to with respect to the malachas of Shabbos. So this is making the statement that yes, it is. It is considered to be comparable enough because after all, what we're dealing with is not even yet at this point a kli that's really removed from the initial cooking. This is the kli in which the initial cooking took place. Whatever you pour out of that still absolutely has the capacity to cook other foods as well. Lefikach, therefore, yesh lahakpid shelo lishpoch mikli rishon al alei tes. Certainly, you can't pour from, let's say, that tea kettle that was on the blech. That's the kli rishon. Certainly can't pump directly out of the urn, out of the Shabbos urn, directly onto, let's say, a tea bag or tea leaves. Shelo nisbashlu al gabei ha'esh mibo'oyom, that themselves have not already been cooked. Sorry, let me just turn off the waiting room here. Give me one second. Great. So that would be certainly usher, despite the fact that you're not actually cooking on the stovetop. Oh, I'm not cooking on the stovetop. That's not really bishul. This isn't akin to the sort of bishul that they would have been doing for the Mishkan, is it? Yes, comparable enough, similar enough, either because they were doing this sort of thing actually in the Mishkan, or just because we don't see a substantive enough difference between cooking on the stove and pouring from something that was cooked on the stove. This absolutely is still considered to be bishul. So if you're dealing with tea that has not already been cooked, so then you certainly can't take a dry, raw, so to speak, tea bag and pour hot water directly from the urn onto it. V'chein. Similarly, shelo lishpoch mikli rishon lisoch tzalachas, not to pour from a kli rishon into a dish, a kos, or into a cup, she'ena nikios, ve'ena nyaveshos legamres. This is a really, really important point. I think this is something that we spoke about at some point, maybe a couple of shiurim back. The importance of trying our best to take stock of the status of any cup that we're refilling. Right now, we are talking about iruy from a kli rishon, pouring directly out of a kli rishon. The reality is that bishul also applies even at further stages in the process, even once it's been poured out of the kli rishon and now is maybe even in something else, has been transferred maybe even into another kli. We'll speak about that as it comes. But meanwhile, this case would be something like, I had a cup of tea and I finished my cup of tea and I want a refill. So now what about, let's say I don't have the tea bag in the cup anymore. And now I simply want to, let's talk about the way that we would actually make tea, right? So we would pour from the urn, skipping ahead a little bit, but pouring from the urn, kli rishon, into a kli sheni. pouring from that klisheni then into a klishlishi. Okay, so I have this designated klisheni that I've used. It's a ceramic mug and it's sitting on the countertop. I use that simply to pass the water basically from the kli rishon into the kli shlishi that I actually made the tea in, right? Now I finish my tea in the kli shlishi and I want to repeat the process all over again. So very simply, I want to refill that kli sheni with hot water and pour that water from the kli sheni into the kli shlishi. So you have to be careful because if there are droplets of water that still remain in that kli sheni from the first time you filled it up, and that was already 10, 15 minutes ago, those droplets have completely cooled off. Those droplets are ice cold at this point. To then pour water from the kli rishon, to pour water from the urn, or to pump water in from the urn directly into this kli sheni that now has droplets in it, or maybe other particles he's talking about, if it's enonaki, if it's not clean of something else, whether it's water particles, something else, but little droplets of water, that really is something that we want to just be mindful of, be careful of before you actually refill. Before you refill, try to take stock. Are those droplets really very, very cold at this point because they've been waiting out? They've just been hanging out for a very long time. Very simply, you want to take a towel or paper towel or a napkin and just dry off the inside before you actually refill that kos sheni a second time. Not that onerous, but just something to be conscious of, something to be mindful of. You also should not pour from a kli rishon into some kind of like cereal. I wrote here cream of wheat. Yeah, right. Cream of wheat, farina, some sort of like cereal in order to warm it up. If it is very, very, if it's very liquid, if it's very diluted, if it's very solid, right? If you, I eat oatmeal just about every morning for breakfast. So when it first goes into the bowl, it's basically a liquid. You wait a little while, you wait another couple of minutes and it cools off and the liquid gets that much more absorbed into the oats and everything sort of congeals a little bit. You wait 2 minutes and you're looking more like an oatmeal kugel than a regular bowl of oatmeal. But assuming it's still liquid, then we would still have this potential of yesh bishel achar bishel because it is lach, it is liquid. And therefore, if it's something that, let's say, made like baby cereal or something like that, and it's very, very runny, so that liquid maybe has cooled down at this point. When you pour hot water in directly from the urn, you're now warming cool liquid back up to Yad Saledes. That becomes problematic. Rather, what you should do here is you should pour hot water from a kli sheni. So it's sort of like a spoiler alert. We're really talking about Iri Kli Rishon right now, but within a kli sheni, certainly from a kli sheni, that doesn't cook any liquid that has already been cooked. So if we're still dealing with Irui from a kli rishon pouring out of a kli rishon, if you have talk about these two examples. If you have, let's say, a bowl of baby cereal that you've already mixed up and concocted, very runny, definitely liquid, and it cools down. Change a baby's diaper, come back, and you just want to heat it up a little bit more. So to pour hot water directly from the kli rishon into that bowl in such a manner that it might bring the whole thing up or some of those particles up to Yad Saledes, the liquid droplets, not the actual cooked particles at this point, but you might bring the whole thing, or you might bring the liquid up to Yad Saledes. So that certainly becomes problematic. That would be like recooking. So you just want to be careful rather than pouring it directly or having it pumped directly from the urn, pour it into a kli sheni first, then pour the kli sheni into that bowl, into that dish of cereal. Similarly, again, making a cup of tea. So making a cup of tea, you know you're going to be pouring from the urn into a kli sheni, then into the kli shlishi. But what happens when I want to repeat the process? I want to do it all over again. So you're doing it all over again, just be mindful. Be mindful of those residual droplets inside of the kli sheni. Are you going to be cooking those all over again when you deposit the water, you draw the water from the kli rishon, from the urn, or from the tea kettle on the stove directly onto those cold, already cold droplets that would be warming them up all over again? That would really be an act of bishul. So you got to be careful. Just got to be mindful. Again, none of this is all that challenging. This is more a matter of consciousness than it is real inconvenience. So to be aware that pouring water out of a kli rishon has the potential to cook. And most likely where this comes up is recooking liquids that have already once been cooked. So far, so good. Questions? We okay? Fantastic. Okay. Feel free to interrupt at any time. Take yourself off mute and feel free to ask away. All right. So let's keep going. Mem Zion. Let's take a look. Mutter la'aros ni kli rishon. You can pour out of a kli rishon. Va'afilu hu omed al gabei ha'esh, even if it is standing on the fire. Right. This is the inverse of what we just spoke about. So even if it's on the fire, an urn or an electric kumkum, right, that has the base like screwed on. Or just tipping the kettle while it's actually on the fire. Even if it's al gabei ha'esh, even if it's on the fire, you can pour it out. Al mashke posher shelo nitztanein mibishulo. You can pour it onto, let's say, tepid water, lukewarm water that hasn't completely cooled off from the temperature that it had achieved when it was originally cooked. So what does that mean? What does that look like? Let's say I'm refilling my cup of tea, and I'm refilling that klisheni, the mug, the ceramic mug that's sitting next to the urn. So let's say I'm refilling it, and I'm refilling it not after I already had my cup of tea. I'm refilling it simply because not only do I want a cup of tea, but my wife wants a cup of tea. So one after the other, I fill up the klisheni, make a cup of tea for my wife, fill up the klisheni again, make a cup of tea for me. Do I need to be conscious? Do I need to be concerned that the droplets that are in the klisheni now are going to be recooked when I depress the top of the urn a second time? Absolutely not. You just did it. Those droplets are still warm-ish. Remember they said that's the benchmark. As long as they are not completely cooled down, the threshold that's usually given is as long as it would still be suitable as, let's say, a warm drink. It's not piping hot. It's not maybe how you really like your tea, but it's clearly not a cool drink. It's a warm drink. It's, you know, a warm tea, if not piping hot tea, if not scalding hot tea. So then we don't have to be concerned. Then we don't view this as my potentially recooking those liquids. We say yesh bishel achar bishel belach, that you can recook liquids. But there's a limit to that. We don't say that you can recook liquids even if it's just, well, it's cooled off 15 degrees and now you're bringing it back up to temperature. It's when it's really gone cold and then you're bringing it up to Yatzaladis. That's where it's problematic. But if it's descended, you know, 10 degrees, 15, 20 degrees below Yatzaladis and now you're bringing it back up to that temperature, that's not considered to be a problem. Oh, al davar yadesh, or onto something dry, vafilu hukar, even if it is cold. If for whatever reason, you know, you have a, boiled potato and, you want it in hot water. The hard boiled egg or whatever, you're trying to remove the peel and you want a little hot water or whatever it is, or, the beitza in salt water, something like that. The Seder is on a Friday night, so really you can't cook, but you want a little bit of hot water. You don't just want the egg in cold water and cold salt water. You want it in hot water, fine. So all those scenarios where you have something that's already been cooked and it's completely cooked, even though it's cold now, the fact that it's cold is irrelevant, because when it comes to yavesh, when it comes to something dry, a solid cooked food, we say that there's no way, of course, that you could possibly re-cook that. But tonight, shehumavushalim kol tzarchem. Obviously, it has to be completely cooked through and through. If it's a little bit raw, now the addition of that extra irui, that extra pouring out of the kli rishon, may well complete the cooking process. That would be an actual problem of real, genuine, bona fide bishul on Shabbos. As long as you steer clear of that, this would be mutter. I think likely, if anybody can think of a likely scenario where this comes up with davar yavesh, I'm really all ears. As you can see, I'm trying to reach for one. Where this comes up all the time, certainly, is that tea or coffee or even soup. Soup becomes a little bit difficult to exactly analyze according to these on these same terms because of the presence of the ladle. The ladle might already be considered a klisheni, potentially anyway. But if for the most part we assume that it really is more or less a kli rishon, then this is where it comes up all the time. It comes up with tea and it comes up with soup, remaining droplets and remaining, you know, residue in the actual bowl. What about plunging the ladle in? Right. That's not even irui from a kli rishon. That's kli rishon mamish. Where if you have a little bit of soup left in the ladle, so do I have to be conscious every single time I ladle out a bowl for my wife. I ladle out a bowl for one of my kids. I ladle out a bowl for another kid. Do I need to be concerned that it be completely dried out every single time? Of course not. Why should I have to be concerned? That residue that still is on the surface of the, it's inside of the ladle, on the surface of the ladle, still warm. Since it's still warm, ein bishul achar bishul. We say yesh bishul achar bishul balach, but only to a certain extent, only to a certain degree. We don't say that because it's cooled off 5 degrees, now you bring it back up to yatzel levis, therefore that's cooking all over again. Absolutely not. So just because it's cooled off a little bit, perhaps by the process of removing it from the actual pot, so that still would not be considered an act of bishul. However, you're going for seconds, you got to be careful. You got to be concerned. You got to be cautious. If it's been sitting outside of the pot, so then you really do want to dry it off. If it hasn't been sitting outside the pot, by the way, is where it's a double-edged sword when it comes to the ladle. If it's been sitting inside the pot, it's just been sitting there inside the pot the entire time everybody had their first round of soup, everybody would agree that when you come back, that ladle is now considered to be a kli rishon. It's been steeped in the pot. It's been sitting in the hot pot of soup. If that's a kli rishon, then again, that really is irui from a kli rishon. When you ladle out into the bowl, now you have to be sure that the bowl is properly dried out. So again, this is, you know, it's like tearing up toilet paper and that sort of thing, tearing up paper towels and those kinds of things before Shabbos. That's more a matter of actual endeavor, something that we need to actually be involved and engaged in. We have to remember to prepare for Shabbos properly. This doesn't quite rise to that level, not necessarily a further burden or something else to put on the, oh, this is like one more thing that you can't do. But it is a matter of consciousness. This is something to just be aware of, something to be mindful of. Again, the more we appreciate, this is why very important when we're doing even halacha lemaisa to also have a sense of the actual sort of the ideology behind the halacha and the way that the mechanics of the halacha actually operate. If we understand the mechanics, it stands to reason that yes, you would be reheating those liquids in some of those cases. If you're going for a refill, tea, coffee, soup, you want to be careful. Make sure the bowl, the cup, are dry. Let's see, we got a comment here on the chat. Winter soup in the pot that is no longer on the block fire gets cold quickly. Yes, you have to be careful. If the soup is actually warm, no longer yatzel levis, we don't have to worry. Right, correct, right. All of this, this whole consideration of potential bishul, whether kli rishon, iri from a kli rishon, this is all only if it's actually yatzel levis. You're absolutely correct, Maria, that if the entire pot has cooled down, then you don't have to worry about bishul at any level of this. Where it will always be present is something like an urn, right? Where it still continues to be kept hot because it's plugged in. All right, let's keep rolling here. All right, so let's take a look. We're still in the middle of Mem Zayin. Let's keep going. Lefikach, therefore, mutter lases tamtzis teh. Therefore, it is mutter. It is mutter to place tea essence, she'odena chama b'miktas, as long as it is somewhat warm, b'soch hakos into the cup, v'lishpoch aleha mayim chamim midud haShabbos, and then to pour hot water in from the Shabbos urn. Anybody on the call use tea essence?
Yes.
Yes. That's yes for tea essence. Okay, so it's still warm, like on Friday night, right?
Depends how early in the day you make it.
Okay, fair enough. Right, that does make a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. There would be no reason to ever leave it on the blech, right? It's just left next to the next to the urn.
I've never had it be still warm when I'm using it, but yeah, it could be warm if you made it right before Shabbos. It would still be warm.
Right. Okay. So in that scenario, if it's still somewhat warm, so then you could put it directly into the cup that you're planning on making the tea in, right? Because again, so if you're not familiar, what's tea essence? Tea essence is like tea concentrate. If you refrain from using tea bags or tea leaves at all on Shabbos, how do you have a cup of tea? What you do is in a, you know, something that's maybe larger, a little larger than a glass, but some sort of container, you use, you know, 4, 5, 6, whatever tea bags and cover them with water. So now you have really concentrated tea essence so that you could use just a little bit of that in a cup of hot water. And that basically replicates a cup of tea effectively. Think like Asis or you know, like a Kool-Aid type syrup, that kind of thing. Or with the whenever the Gemara speaks about wine, the term that's always used is mezigas hakos, is mixing the cup. And the reason why mixing the cup is always referred to is because their wine wasn't like our wine. Their wine was more like wine concentrate. It was close to syrupy, heavily concentrated wine. So you would always mix it at a ratio of one part wine to four parts water. And that would then reconstitute it to a degree that would be palatable. So at any rate, if let's say you have something like tea essence, that's what we're talking about here. And if that's still warm, let's say it was made shortly before Shabbos. So you're talking about having a cup of tea after the Su'udan Leil Shabbos, it's still warm. Since it's still warm, it's not considered to be an act of bishul, even if you pour directly from the urn into that tea essence. Velishpoch aleha mayim chamim midura Shabbos, it would be totally mutter to pour directly on it from the urn. Umin haroi hu lahaniach es haklisha bo tamtis hateh agabi dud haShabbos od lifnei haShabbos. It would be good to place it on the actual urn itself. Kadesha amnam tishar chama. That way it remains warm. I guess that's what he's talking about, putting it. Now you need not like what we think of as a Shabbos urn, like the plastic insulated, push button pump type urn. Those don't stay warm on top, right? Because they're fully insulated. But if you had like a metal urn, samovar type of situation, so then if you leave the container of tea essence on top, it remains warm. Similarly, if you have dried out cereal, you have like that oatmeal kugel, you're trying to reconstitute it, you're trying to mix it back in, since it's become totally dry, if it's totally dry, it's not a liquid anymore, then it wouldn't be considered to be an act of recooking it, just in order to warm it up. Obviously, in the case of tea essence, if it's not warm, so you just have to treat it like any other cold, already cooked liquid. It's no different from milk, which, as we've already discussed, and as we'll continue to see, it would still be mutter to place that inside of a kli sheni. So once the hot water has already been put into the kli sheni, then you could still go about depositing the tea essence directly into that kli. All right. Mem ches. Ha matzekes shaba motziim es ha'ochel mikli rishon. So the ladle. Okay, here we go. So ladle that you're going to remove the food, let's say a pot of soup, and you're going to ladle out the soup into individual bowls. Min hadin shetehei nikiyav yevesha. So it needs to be clean and it needs to be dry. This is just as we discussed. L'shemachnisa b'kader achrei hapam reishona. After you put it back into the pot after the first time, yakpid, you have to be careful. You have to be careful that it's not cold. Now, if you're ladling one bowl after the other, no need to be concerned. There's nothing to worry about. Of course, it's not going to be cold. You're standing there ladling out, 5, 10, 15 bowls, depending on how labadik your home is on Friday night. Nothing to worry about. It's going to remain warm. Where you need to be careful, obviously, again, is on refills, if the ladle has been out, there's still a little bit of residue and there's still droplets of soup on the outside of the ladle, that's where you need to be careful. Once you've deposited it inside the kli rishon, bifrat, and this is where things get a little bit confusing and a little bit gray amongst the poskim. To what degree do we consider that ladle to be its own independent kli? And to what degree is it considered to be part of the kli rishon? So here, Shmir Shabbos Kilchos Rav Neivert is saying that certainly if it's left inside of the pot for, something more than just, a dunk, you're not just dunking and, scooping, ladling, and then pouring into the individual bowls, but rather you're inserting into the pot and it's just staying there, that certainly is going to be considered to be part of the kli rishon. Yesh la kol dine kli rishon. It's considered to be a kli rishon, v'lachein, and therefore, so any way you slice it, either when it comes to the ladle you need to view as something that's being dunked into the kli rishon, and therefore, if it's considered to be its own independent kli that now has droplets of liquid on the outside, residue of soup on the inside, we're not talking about solids, we're not talking about little bits of vegetable or little bits of chicken that are left on the outside, but the droplets of liquid, those solid foods can never be recooked. They've already been cooked once. There's no double jeopardy on solids. On the liquids, very much so. Yesh bishel achar bishel. So you got to be very careful. If you're going to dunk that ladle back into the pot, yes, you'll be recooking those droplets. If you already had it sitting in the pot for a while, so now the ladle is considered to be its own kli rishon. If it's its own kli rishon, when you draw it out of the pot, when you're coming to pour it out into the actual bowl, that'll be considered iri from a kli rishon. Now you have to be careful about the bowl, if not the actual ladle. Is the bowl dry? Is the bowl clean? Are the droplets of soup that remain in the bowl, are they still warm, lukewarm, tepid, or have they really gone cold? In which case, you really do want to dry out the bowl. Again, a little bit of consciousness when it comes to how we do our refills on, Friday night soup. Yesh la kol dine kli rishon. So if it's been left in the pot for any given short period of time, then it's considered to be like a kli rishon itself. Therefore, asur la'aros hatav shel shebesocha matzekes. It would be asur to pour that broth, that soup from the ladle, al ma'achal shiyesh bo mishum iser bishel. You want to be careful about pouring in a way that would constitute bishel. I don't believe we're going to get to it here. We have mentioned this before. I'll just bring it up now. I think this is going to be coming up if I recall correctly, but I think it bears mentioning now. One other scenario in which we may end up with a bishel problem in a soup bowl, not only with respect to recooking the liquids, but also what about the addition of other foods from beyond the soup ecosystem that we're now introducing into the soup bowl ecosystem. So what am I talking about? What about challah? What about challah? What about mandolin? What about croutons? What about all those kinds of things that you might add to the soup bowl? What about them? Is it mutter to do that on Shabbos, and how do we go about doing it on Shabbos? So ordinarily, as we've been discussing, when it comes to solid foods, no double jeopardy, right? And I know we've discussed this before. It really, really bears mention. This is so practical. It comes up. It just comes up all the time. It comes up literally on a weekly basis in my house. When it comes to solid food, no double jeopardy. Something that's already been cooked, something that's already been mevushel, cannot become mevushel again. So if you have a carrot that's already been cooked, there's no such thing as re-cooking it. So even if they used to do this in camp, I don't know if anybody does this at home. In camp, they used to, not only camp, also my grandmother used to do this. She did this with vegetables also. Sorry, I'm having a little private stroll down memory lane. Certainly with a chicken, maybe the vegetables also, although I don't recall. I have vivid memories of my grandmother, especially before Pesach, for Hashanah, and she would make chicken soup. My mother's mother, Allah Shalom. So she would go through the soup, pull out all the chicken. I think it was just with the chicken, and she would debone everything. And then she would make this very, very neat, like 9x13 tin of just the soup chicken. And the way that my mother would always serve it would be with, you'd have the broth in the bowl. And I think there'd be vegetables in it. I think the carrots and things like that were still in the bowl. At least the carrots and whatever would still be in the pot, parsnip, v'chulei. And then you would add chicken back into your bowl, like from the outside, that is all very neatly pulled and deboned. So everything that my grandmother had already done on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yontif. So that chicken, nothing to worry about. That chicken has been cooked before. You can't recook that chicken. That chicken's already been mevushel. Challah. Hasn't challah also been cooked already? So not exactly as we've discussed. There is a distinction, al pi halacha, between dry cooking and moist cooking. Probably this is still in our rearview mirror from Pesach, where we know that there are different modes of cooking and therefore different modes of kashering. Was something made, let's say, chametz dik, or something made not kosher, or something made treif, so to speak, or basar bakala, through either dry heat or moist heat? Did it happen through a liquid medium, or did it happen just with dry, direct heat? Challah is baked in a dry oven without any further liquid. Even if there's a little egg wash on top, challah is a dry item. It's been baked. It hasn't been cooked. It hasn't been boiled. It hasn't been mevushel. It's really something that is baked. It is an act of afia rather than an act of bishel. When it comes to Shabbos, we recognize that distinction and we say, Ein bishel achar bishel, but yesh bishel achar afia. The yesh afia achar bishel. If something has been cooked, boiled, it can be re-baked or re-roasted. And more likely, if something has been roasted, it now can be re-cooked or it can be cooked in the first place. Challah, let's say roast chicken that you want to add into your chicken soup. These are question marks, because if you're adding it into a bowl of soup, you may potentially at least be boiling it. Now, at what point are we makpid on that? We are makpid on that in a kli rishon. Certainly couldn't put it into the pot of chicken soup itself, tear a piece of challah. You certainly couldn't do so in a kli sheni either. You could do so in a kli shlishi. So here's the rub. Is a bowl of soup a kli sheni or a kli shlishi? It depends on the ladle. Depends on the ladle. Is the ladle considered a kli sheni, which means that the bowl of soup is a kli shlishi? Or is the ladle a kli rishon, and therefore the bowl of soup is considered to be a kli sheni? So certainly, if the ladle, as Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa just mentioned, if the ladle was left inside of the pot of soup for any given, you know, even short-ish amount of time, then we consider it to be part of the kli rishon. If, however, it's just being dunked in repeatedly back and forth and back and forth, but it's never really left in there, then at least potentially, we might consider that ladle to be a kli sheni, and we do with respect to this halacha. With respect to yesh bishul achar afia, the idea that I could potentially boil something even after it's been baked, with respect to that halacha, which is in of itself something of a chumra, we are makel when it comes to the ladle. We say that let the ladle be considered a kli sheni for those purposes, as long as it hasn't really been submerged and really been hanging out in the pot of soup for a very long time. And therefore, we can then consider it a kli sheni. The bowl soup is a kli shlishi. Since the bowl soup is a kli shlishi, I can now put my challah inside. You want to be careful. You want to be careful that, like, you don't have dry matzah crumbs inside the bottom of the bowl that you then ladle soup directly over. That really is problematic. Or bits of challah in the bottom of the bowl that haven't yet been cooked in the previous round or whatever, that you then ladle the soup on top of. You do want to be very careful that that doesn't happen. One final point on this note is the yellow croutons, right? The mini yellow mandolin. So we should just be aware that those don't present any sort of problem with respect to this halacha, because those are deep fried. Maybe that makes you queasy, but those are deep fried. Because they're deep fried, the way that we deep fry, obviously, is by taking a great collection of oil, of liquid, and then frying the bits of dough inside of it. That's considered to be bishul. That's not considered to be, even though they end up crunchy, that's not considered to be an act of afia. It's not an act of baking. It's actually an act of boiling. You're boiling in oil. Frying is really just boiling in oil. Since you're using a liquid medium, they're considered to already be mavushal. Since they're already mavushal, there's no concern about putting them into a bowl of soup. So even potentially you could ladle directly over the top of those croutons without any concern. Even if the ladle was left for a period of time inside the pot of soups, that it's not a kli sheni, it's certainly a kli rishon. My bowl is certainly only a kli sheni, even though the bowl is a kli sheni, so I can still put those croutons inside. Again, you just want to be, this is all just a matter of, you know, it's Shabbos mindfulness. You just want to try to work this all out, that if you have left that ladle inside the bowl of soup, for inside the pot of soup, I'm sorry, for any period of time, then it would be considered to be kli sheni. You put it inside of your soup. I'm sorry, that's considered to be a kli rishon. You ladle now into your soup. That soup is considered to be kli sheni. If that soup is a kli sheni, then you really can't put challah inside of it. So you just want to be on the, you just want to be on the lookout. How about spices? Spices, for the most part, don't pose a problem inside of a kli sheni. I think we're actually going to deal with that here. Are we going to deal with that? Once it's a kli sheni, we'll see. That's not going to be an issue. Our spices also, when we talk about spices, unless you're talking about herbs, may be different. But spices like onion and garlic, I believe, are all considered to be cooked already. And more than that, are not easily recooked. Herbs may be a little bit more of a problematic for, maybe more problematic for herbs. You want to make sure that you're already in a kli shlishi. You want to be just as mindful as you would be for something like challah. Mem tes. Tov li himana. Me'irui mayim li kli rishon al sukar, sakarin, al kafen. You want to be careful about not pouring directly from the kli rishon onto these items. Sugar, sweetener, instant coffee. That's what I'm looking for. Instant coffee. Al tamtis marak, or let's say like soup bouillon, of kas chalav, milk powder, of kas cocoa. Really, any of these similar sorts of examples where we have powders, where we have soluble powders that are the product of liquid that has already been cooked, but now themselves are dry. That's how we arrive at all of these, at all of these things, that we take the liquid. Liquid is boiled to the point of evaporation, and what through a the whole process, what we end up with is just this residue of a powder. Even if these items were cooked at some point over the course of processing them, over the course of the manufacturing of them, you still cannot pour directly from the kli rishon. Just get to the end here and we'll talk about why this is. First, you should pour that hot water from the urn, from the urn into kli sheni, and then you add them afterwards. So why is this? So general rule, this is a chumrah, right? Really, this doesn't exactly compute, right? Here I'm making this pitch to understand the mechanics and the basically how these things work. And once we know how they work, then we can sort of plot out we can anticipate what halacha will pass in. So this is definitely a curveball. Really, this doesn't compute. Fact of the matter is, if you have liquid that is already cooked, then you should be able. If you have a solid that's already been cooked, then since the solid's already been cooked, ein bishul achar bishul, why should you not be able to pour directly on this from the urn? The urn is iri kli rishon, but what are you cooking? Sugar is solid, and sugar's already been cooked. They boil off, they evaporate all the liquid, and then you're left with the sugar. Same with the coffee. So why should I not be allowed to pour the hot water directly on it? Again, this is assuming that's part of the actual processing. Answer is that it is a chumrah, but when you have a solid that is the, not even the byproduct, but the intended product of a process whereby liquid was boiled and the solid is what remained, the solid is what was left, we treat that l'chumrah as a liquid itself. If something is dissolvable in the liquid, I may actually have said that incorrectly. Not so much that because it's the product of the liquid, but when you have something that then dissolves into the liquid that you're then looking at, we treat that l'chumra as being a liquid itself. So is it the case that cocoa powder came about because they boiled off and evaporated all the liquid and then you're left with the cocoa powder? Sure, that may be the case. But nevertheless, since this is now going to be dissolved into liquid, we treat it as the liquid itself. Since the sugar is going to be dissolved into the liquid, we treat it as the liquid itself. Since the coffee is going to be dissolved into the liquid, we treat it as the liquid itself. What does it mean to be treated as liquid itself? So that means that this was liquid that, yes, had been cooked before, had been cooked previously when it was first manufactured, but yesh bishul achar bishul balach, we treat it as a liquid. So this is just very, we went through this a while ago, a number of shiurim before, but this is very, it's something to really be aware of, and it's something very worthwhile to just keep in our back pockets. When we typically make a cup of coffee, right, there are no fewer than three, maybe even four liquids or four items that may all be put into a kli sheni. So you just want to make sure that you're getting to the point of kli sheni before starting to add anything. Very simply, all that means is going from the hot water in the urn into the actual cup and then adding everything else in afterwards, adding the sugar in afterwards, because you can, yesh bishul achar bishul, but not in a kli sheni. Yesh bishul achar bishul balach, I'm sorry. We can recook liquids, but we don't consider liquids to be recooked in a kli sheni. Same with the instant coffee. We might consider it to be a liquid, but there's no such thing as recooking a liquid in a kli sheni. Milk has already been cooked because as part of the pasteurization, it is heated up beyond yatsa ledes, and therefore pouring it into a kli sheni is also acceptable, as we'll see. Even water, even uncooked water can't be cooked in a kli sheni, if let's say you're putting it in just to cool it down a little bit. Let's just get to the end of this section. We'll call it a night. Nun. Mutter li tein bakbuk hamachil chalav l'soch kli reik. It is mutter to take, let's say you're warming up a baby bottle. Take that baby bottle, put it in an empty kli, put it in an empty mug. La'aros alav mayim roschim, and then pour boiling water over it. Pour water from the urn over it. Afilu mikli rishon, even though that urn is a kli rishon, k'dei l'chamemes hachalav, in order to heat up that milk. However, now I couldn't heat up the milk directly, because that would be, even if the milk has already been cooked, that would be geish bishel achar bishel. Now, if you're talking about mother's milk, then that is, it's, there's no bishel at all. It's never been. Unless there's some heavy duty machinery in your garage or basement, there's no pasteurization that's taking place. It's absolutely raw. So nevertheless, putting it into a kli and then heating that up would be acceptable. We'll speak more about that in a second. Ulam yeshli zahir shamayim hachamim, that the hot water lo yichasu es habakbuk es habakbuk lagamri, that it doesn't completely, which is difficult to achieve anyway, because then everything tends to overflow, but not that it becomes completely surrounded. The issue at hand is that if it completely surrounds, and now you have a kli that has food inside of it, and that kli is tightly surrounded, completely surrounded by something that is hot, that becomes an issue of hatmana. That becomes an issue of insulating on Shabbos, not so much an issue of direct bishul, but it's the consideration or the issue of hatmana. What is the leniency here? Why is this mutter? You're not allowed to heat milk. Milk, if it's mother's milk, then it's never been heated before. It's bishul for the very first time. And even if it's cow's milk, you can't heat that up directly from a kli rishon. So we assume that when we talk about a kli rishon pouring from a kli rishon only cooks kidei klipa. It only cooks the outermost shell of whatever it is that's being cooked. Now, if you're dealing with a raw piece of meat or a potato, that's a problem because it's cooking the outside. If you're dealing with a liquid, there is really no outside shell. It means that it cooks whatever it immediately and first comes into contact with. So whatever portion of the liquid it comes into contact with, that's also problematic because it's going to cook that little bit of liquid. Here, in this case, what's the klipa? What's the shell? The shell is the container itself, the vessel itself. We don't see the iroi, the pouring out from that kli rishon, as directly impacting the actual milk on the inside of the bottle. Only really that it impacts the bottle, and then secondarily it impacts the milk. Again, you want to make sure that you don't completely submerge the bottle, because then that would be an act of hatmana, an act of insulating on Shabbos. V'chdei lahagbir es chom achalav, in order to raise the temperature of the milk. So mutar gam machzor lahachlif es hamayim kama v'kama pamim. You could repeat this because obviously the milk, the water that you use is going to cool off when there's this cold milk that's submerged in the middle of it. It acts almost like an ice cube. So therefore you could repeat the process multiple times in order to properly raise the heat, intensify the heat of the milk. You can't put the bottle actually into the kli rishon. It's not just get rid of the middleman. Can't put it directly into the kli rishon, because when something is submerged or inserted into a kli rishon, then we do view that heat as penetrating even into the core of whatever it is that's inserted inside. So conceptually, you stick a potato inside of a kli rishon, then we see even the middle of that potato being cooked. Therefore, if you put a bottle of milk inside, we see even the middle of the bottle of milk being cooked, i.e. the milk itself. The milk in this case has never been cooked and can become cooked. We're not worried about the bottle cook. The bottle can't cook, but the milk inside very much can. So you have to pour the liquid out, but you can't submerge it directly into a kli rishon. So as a if you were ready for like a life hack, maybe of, you know, keeping a pot of hot water on the black all night long, and then you could just stick the bottle of milk directly inside. Not acceptable. You couldn't do that. You would have to pour it out of the kli rishon and then insert the bottle of milk, or rather put the bottle of milk inside of a separate kli, inside of a separate mug, and then pour over the bottle of milk. Even if that kli rishon is not on the eish, not on the fire directly, you still could not do so. Unless there is so much milk, and the milk is so cool, unless you're absolutely certain that there's no way, even if you leave it there, that there's no way for it to reach a point of yatzaledes. Obviously, the einak kli rishon omed agabe ha'ish. If it's on the fire, then of course anything can be brought up to temperature. But if it's not on the fire, so then we don't have to be concerned. As long as you know, that the milk is cold enough and the milk is significant enough in terms of volume that it won't be raised to a point of yatzaledes. Gamatul melis es tachtisa shel tzalachas tinok b'mayim roschim. Could also put the bottom of, let's say, a child, like a baby dish into boiling water. Could be lechamem b'derech zu es ha'ochel shebechelkah el yon shel hatzalacha, like an insert. It sounds like is being described. So you insert the bottom of the dish. If it's like a plastic dish, put that in, let's say, like a basin of hot water, and that's going to cook whatever is held in the compartment above. Same notion there as the bottle of milk. So we assume that Iroi pouring out from a Kli Rishon, pouring directly out from the urn, it cooks the outermost section of whatever it is that you're cooking. If you're dealing with a liquid, there really is no outermost section, and therefore you always have to be careful if it's a liquid that that indeed could be, you know, brought up to that that temperature. But if you're pouring from the Kli Rishon, so meaning we would view that as cooking whatever the stream of hot water initially comes into contact with. And if we're talking about a solid, also just to be careful that if we're talking about a solid that's already been cooked and nothing to be worried about, but if we're talking about a solid that's never been cooked before, whatever that scenario might be, raw fruits, vegetables, who knows, then cooking or pouring from a Kli Rishon would still be considered an act of bishul. Okay. Takes us through Iroi of a Kli Rishon, a lot of really, really practical stuff, coffee, cereal, tea, refills, soups, ladles, from soup to nuts. We got it covered in this shiur. All right, everyone. Shkoyach, thanks very, very much for coming on. Looking forward to next time. Have a wonderful night.
Thank you. Good night.